Welcome back to another episode of the Authentic Recruiter Podcast. If you are part of the recruitment industry and you believe that authentic recruiters change lives, then this is the podcast for you. I'm your host, Claire Akers. I want to say thanks for tuning in. I am so glad you're here. Let's dive in to the episode. Today, I am really, really happy to, it's a first on the Authentic Recruiter podcast, actually. We have got a duo today. I'm delighted to introduce Katie Haggerty and Amy Jakes, who are founders and directors of Haggerty Jakes. Hello, ladies. How are you?
Good morning. Very well, thank you.
Lovely to have you both here, and we're all joined together by the power of Zoom. So life goes on under these lockdown conditions. Like I say, it's the first time we've had two people on the podcast together. So hopefully it'll all flow nicely, and I'm looking forward to seeing the conversation that we have. But why don't you start us off by telling us a bit about your story and how you got to be where you are today?
Okay. Well, shall I go first?
Yeah, go on, Bella.
This is always the tricky bit when there are two of you, isn't it? We set up just over 2 years, about 2.5 years ago now. And we'd known each other for a number of years, having worked together in quite a large recruitment agency, both specialising in legal recruitment. I specialised in private practice legal recruitment for law firms, and Katie for in-house legal teams. Prior to that, we'd come from sort of different backgrounds, really. I had been a lawyer and had worked for a couple of large commercial firms first. And Katie, sorry, I'm speaking for you, Katie.
Don't worry.
has been in legal recruitment for a long time before that. And we naturally worked very well together. We found that lawyers would come in and speak to us about what they were looking for, and quite often they'd want to look across the market at both private practice and in-house legal teams. So we tended to interview them together, and it was just a very sort of natural thing for us. So life moved on. We both had families, and I actually moved into an internal recruitment role for a law firm, I'd worked for previously, which was quite nice. It was a maternity contract, and once that was coming to an end, we decided it was sort of now or never, and we should set up on our own and do it the way that we wanted to do it. So here we are. And really pleased that we did.
Yeah. Katie, what would you like to add to that?
No, I think Amy's put that quite well, really. I think the thought of, I was on maternity leave when Amy had left and gone to do it for a maternity contract. It's all very complicated. And just the thought of going back into a corporate environment, and, you know, we were working 8 till 6. There was a degree of flexibility, but that's all it was. When you're so dedicated to your job, you want to do a really good job, and it was just very difficult to do that. And obviously, you know, when you work for a large agency, they have to measure you with targets and, you know, KPIs, and they just weren't conducive to what we were doing on a day-to-day basis. And I think that was the biggest thing for both Amy and I. We both agreed that yes, targets are needed when you're in such a large organization to monitor people, but actually on a day-to-day basis, how does that translate? And for the role that we were doing, it didn't, because the legal market, is quite a finite market. Everybody knows everybody. You can't send 50 CVs out a day or speak to 50 people a day, and it tainted the way you were able to do your job, which was kind of where Haggerty Dakes was born, wasn't it, really?
So I'd like to come in to the particular way that you structure your company in a moment. But first of all, I'm dying to know who first broached the topic of setting up together. Was it one of these ones that's hatched over a bottle of wine? Or
it was our husbands, Claire. It was our husbands. Yes, you two should work together. You should do this.
It was actually.
Yeah,
that was a bit of a catalyst. And then we, you know, you sort of talk about it, don't you? And you say, oh, you know, if things were different, how would they be different? And then it kind of it morphed over time, didn't it? And and then we were like, actually, we've just got to do this.
It just happened really naturally, didn't it? With the end of your contract and the end of my maternity leave, it was just the right time. Wasn't it? But we did have a big beat from both husbands.
That's brilliant. I love it. I love
always
it.
Always helpful.
Yeah. And I just love those conversations as well that kind of evolve from, we could never do that too. Okay, but if we did, how might we do it? And then you just it just becomes a possibility, doesn't it, once you put it out there. And now look at you.
We were a bit of a double act at the company that we were at, really. We kind of did things a little bit differently because essentially we were pitched against one another. Mm. You know, there's the term race to place, which used to really get on my whip a little bit. And Amy and I would just never worked like that. And we always had the candidates' interests and the clients, at heart. Mm. And I think you've got to do that. Otherwise, you know, what's the point?
Well, let's go in on that then, because I know you're really proud of the way that you structured the company. Tell me why it's different.
I'll let you answer that, Amy.
Okay. Well, we decided from the outset, normally the traditional model is that every consultant has their own little sort of geographical patch. They might have particular organisations that they look after. And the minute you go outside of that, it passes to somebody else. And you are, you're working basically on your own. We decided that because it had worked so nicely working together, and because for a lot of candidates, they do want to look across the market. They don't just want to hear about one thing. But we would structure differently, and from the outset we would work on everything together. And by that we don't mean a job share, it is literally together. So every candidate that registers with us, we interview together, we work on together, and the same with every job that we're instructed on. And that works really nicely because it is properly consultative. We sit down as, you know, three people, we brainstorm, we go through CVs together. It's not just a case of, you know, we have a job to fill, we have 50 CVs that come in, we sift them and we speak to the ones we like the look of. It's completely different from that. And from the off, I'd say it's much more of a sort of, it's a coaching service and a bit of a career service, as well as obviously talking about the roles that are live and things that we can actively work on at that point. But we have different ideas between us, which is always really good. There's always something that one of us has thought of that the other hasn't.
Mm-hmm.
And that works really nicely. And I think also, I'd like to think, and I hope this is the case, that candidates feel really well looked after, because they've got two of us on their side. Mm-hmm. And, you know, if for any reason one of us is on the phone, the other one is possibly, you know, available to speak to. So we're quite responsive in that respect as well. It's worked very well, hasn't it?
The feedback we've had has been has been really positive, really. And even from a client's point of view as well, you know, we used to see our clients face to face together. We spend a lot of time on Zoom now, the feedback has been actually this works really, really well, and we do feel loved, and we feel like you're listening to us, and that the information that I'm, you know, giving you, and you know, they invest a lot of time in speaking to us. Sometimes we can be on Zoom for an hour and a half with candidates, and if your details are then passed to another recruiter, you know, that does a different patch, just because you're looking Manchester and Leeds, all of that information is lost. Mm-hmm. And I think that's where the kind of larger model falls down, and we kind of pick up. And also, you know, Amy and I just, we complement each other really, really well. I don't mean like, well, like your hair. I mean, you know, Amy does things that, you know, that, you know, I don't, you know, I'm not particularly good at, and, you know, vice versa as well. So we kind of like, we're a bit like a jigsaw piece.
We're very
different, but we're very in tune with one another. So it does work well.
Yeah.
I love it. I love the concept. And one of the major pillars of the Authentic Recruiter concept, if you like, is collaboration. And you two are living it, aren't you?
Yeah.
So I think it's absolutely fabulous to see. Hey, it's Claire here, just jumping on to check whether you have taken my recruitment impact and income scorecard. It's a short quiz, just 30 questions, and at the end, you will get your score and your personalized report. So if you're looking to grow a profitable and purpose-led company, what are you waiting for? Take the scorecard totally free of charge. There is a link in the show notes. Let's get back to the episode. Do you have any ambitions to grow the business, and how do you see that model working as and when you scale?
It's a really hard one, isn't it? Because we've always said this, that yes, I mean, growth is a great thing, but I think like any other organisation, how do you keep those values and the quality? It's a very, very personal service that we offer, you know, and I think that's from the outset, you're quite exposed, you know, it's just the two of us, it's our names, we've decided how we want things to run, and taking that next step is quite a big one, really, because of the way that we operate, and having that sort of, that quality control, I guess, and knowing that other people would have the same ethos as us. So it's something that we do talk about, but something that I think we would be, it would be a very considered approach.
Yeah, we've not quite figured it out yet, have we?
No,
but there's definitely a burning ambition there. It's a watch this space.
Yeah, it's, I think every single business owner goes through the same question when they set up on your own, and it's like you're putting your heart and soul on the line, isn't it? Because you are your business.
Baby, isn't it?
Yeah. Absolutely. And all you have as a recruiter is your reputation. And I've been through that pain myself of bringing people into the business who haven't quite got the same standards and work ethic as you have. Yeah. And it's a very painful process, and trying to keep those lovely values and those client relationships that you've sweated blood, sweat and tears to get to the level that they are is a really, really tricky one, and I suppose I just wish you a lot of luck in keeping that good stuff as you grow, and I think it raises a really interesting question about not having a one size fits all approach to owning
absolutely.
A recruitment company.
How
do we translate that? But we will. We will.
We will. Yeah, I think we'll have to, because, you know, there comes a time when every business has got to grow to be able to do what it needs to do.
But grow is a different, it's a definition that's very personal, isn't it? I mean, I hope you don't mind me mentioning, we had a little chat about this off air, but it sounds like your business model for where you are in your lives at the moment, I'm talking specifically about having young children, serves you very well, because you've got the option to flex as needed.
Although we've never worked quite so hard in our lives, I don't think we laughed over it.
It's true.
It's on our own terms, isn't it?
And it doesn't feel like it did working, you know, long hours. And they're different hours as well. You've got the total flexibility. You know, if I want to be speaking to somebody, you know, in the evening, I can do. You know, it's not a case of, oh, well, you know, you haven't got access to the office or, you know, the phone or whatever. So we do work in different ways. But yeah, I mean, it's, I think even more so now, having, you know, we're all working through a pandemic where we're having to juggle so many things from home. You know, we've been doing that for a while before, it's slightly more heightened at the moment, and more people in the house. But it's amazing to have that ultimate flexibility and freedom. Mm. And it doesn't mean you work less at all, but you work in different ways. And it's really suited us. And I don't think it hasn't had any negative effect on the output of our work at all. Mm. In actual fact, I think you feel more in control because you can sort of say, right, well, I'll do this at this point in the day and I'll do that later, or it's not so rigid. So it's been a great thing for us.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, as you know, I set up my business when I was pregnant with just finishing maternity leave with my second child, so 6 years ago, and it was because my boss wasn't particularly sympathetic to me being pregnant, and I feel very passionately that attitudes need to change in the recruitment industry. Mm. And from what I understand, the two of you went through a similar process.
Mm.
What's your view on being a mum and being a successful recruiter? Who wants this one?
Flexibility. I think we're just going back to the flexibility. If you're going to be successful, you know, having that ability to be able to work around the children while still being there for them is key. And what we've learned throughout the pandemic is everybody's in the same boat. Mm-hmm. So I used to think, oh, I have to be, you know, the children don't have to be here, or, you know, when I was speaking to a candidate or a client, and now it's just par for the course. You know, mm-hmm. you know, they've got children popping up in the background, or dogs, or, you know, whatever, or, you know, their wife walking past, or their partner, or whatever. People are real, mm-hmm. and they have lives. And I think that one thing to come out of the pandemic is that we have all appreciated that everybody has a life outside of work. Well, you know, we certainly have. And I think that works both ways. So I think the pandemic has helped in that respect. But
definitely.
Flexibility is definitely the key, and being able to work around them. And in such a, you know, a formal environment from before, you've got to be here at your desk, presenteeism, you know, April 6th. It's, you know, your child's got an assembly, or they're sick, or, you know, you feel guilty. And then, you know, so there's none of that for us anymore. And make it more successful.
But I think it's also really important for clients and candidates to see that we're all human, and we've all got these different things going on. We're not just robots. And, you know, a lot of the time we spend, obviously more on the candidate side, getting to know them and what's going on in their lives. I think it's really important to show that, you know, you've got sort of empathy, and you can understand, you know, the different pressures that they might be under.
It's actually really helpful when you're matching them to a firm or an organisation, because,
absolutely.
You know, the worst thing you can do is put somebody into somewhere where you do have to be at your desk and there isn't, you know, a degree of flexibility or an understanding. Mm. I mean, we naturally attract clients that are more flexible, and the legal industry is getting much, much better. But it's about knowing which clients are which.
I actually use it as a bit of a test these days. So I remember in my early years of owning the business, I used to pretend I had a meeting or something, so I couldn't take a call. And then suddenly I just stopped and said, I'm in the playground waiting for the kids to come out, happy to speak, but if there's some screaming in the background, that's why it is. And, you know, they were absolutely totally cool about it. And from then on in, I've never tried to pretend I was with the kids when I wasn't, or vice versa. And if someone's got a problem with it, then that's a huge red flag to me, and a really, really easy and quick way to decline to work with them again.
It's very true.
Okay, so that's the other question I want to ask. Are your kids proud of you? Do they see you as role models?
I mean, my little one is, I think she's very aware of sort of the world of work now. And she'll talk about sort of, you know, she knows that I used to go and work in an office that she'd visited. And now she knows that, well, no, none of us are working in offices at the moment, but that, you know, my office is at home, you know, would be at Katie's home if we could be together, is out and about meeting people. And I think she finds it really quite intriguing. And I like the fact that she can see that we have a business and that, you know, you can do these things, you know, without sounding too feminist about it. But yeah, I'm quite proud of that.
My heart burst the other day because I walked into my daughter's room and she's got like a play kind of typewriter thing, and she was talking on the phone, but she was kind of imitating me and
what you're doing.
And she was like, "I'm just working." And it was so cute. And she will come and sit with me, and you know, she'll write and, you know, pretend that she's working. And I seem to remember doing that when my mum was at work, and I used to go into the office with her. And you know, I think that was really important. She was a really big role model to me because she worked when I was younger, as did yours.
Yeah. It is really
important for them to see. Definitely.
Yeah, I wonder actually if we kind of capture this moment, whether we'll look back in 10, 15 years and realise that we've inspired the next generation of entrepreneurs just by role modelling that.
Well, I hope so. Amazing.
Okay, so what advice would you have for somebody who's just thinking that maybe they've been on furloughed or made redundant or just sick of their boss and is thinking, I want to launch on my own, but has been inspired by your model? What do you wish you had known then that you now know, having done it for a couple of years?
I think it is just having that confidence and going for it. And I think we felt quite early on actually that this was the right thing to do. We had a lot of great support, and I think there were people who were probably quite surprised that we'd done it.
What support did you have?
Support at home first and foremost, and then in terms of the wider world, lots of people saying, "Oh, good on you! That is fantastic. Really, really pleased that you've done that." You know, and we still get people saying that now, 2.5 years down the line.
Interestingly though, wasn't it, Amy? Very interesting. When we first set up, we would go and see clients, mainly men sometimes, and they'd go, "Wow, two women, that's really unusual." And actually it is quite unusual in the world of legal for two women to have set up on their own. I think we're the only ones, certainly in the region.
Yeah, we haven't come across anybody else in this kind of model.
Yeah, I think there might be the odd one person doing it. But that was something that really shocked us, because they were like, "Wow, that's amazing, well done. You know, it was really ballsy for you to do that." And I thought, was it really ballsy? Or are we just doing what we want to do? We had a lot of conversations about that, didn't we? Interesting that people had that perception of it, because, you know, I'm sounding like a feminist now as well, but had we have been two men, would they have said that to them? Probably not.
No.
Yeah, I'm still flattered by it.
But what a gift to be able to turn that comment into your USP, your superpower.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
It was interesting. I think the other thing that we are really glad that we did was invest in branding, because it really gives you a sense of belonging. And, you know, we've got our values, and we've got, the way that everything is branded. And it kind of keeps you focused of what your strategy is.
Yeah, definitely.
If you are going to do that, really invest it in your branding and get that straight in your head before you go to market.
When you say branding, do you mean the actual logo and colours and fonts, etc.? Or do you mean getting your vision, mission and value straight, or everything?
Both.
All of that.
Say both. And you know, doing the logo and everything is really fun, but
yeah, we loved that.
I think both, because you've got to have an identity to back up that ethos and your values as well. So yeah, I would definitely work on that.
Fabulous.
And actually, I'd say some of the first conversations we had when we decided that actually perhaps we will think about this more seriously was, well, how would we be different and what would our values be? And the values came really early on. Before any of the logistics and the practicalities of doing it. And it was very much, right, this is exactly how we want it to be. It will probably change over time or whatever, but, you know, from the outset, actually, it hasn't really changed at all from what we wrote down.
What are your core values and how do they show up in your behaviours?
Well, core values, I guess, are being really genuine, being honest, listening. I think there are quite a lot of recruiters who think that actually they're the ones who should be talking more and selling. And actually, I think what we do a lot more than that is listen to what candidates and clients are looking for, because it's a matching game and not every role is going to be right for everybody. They might have all of the skills on the page, but they don't want to work in that way. So we do a lot of that. And I think ultimately being just easy to deal with and feeling that you're in safe hands. And that's how we like to feel if we're using other services. That you know, we don't want to be sold to. We want somebody to listen to what we're looking for and try and find some kind of solution.
It's a good point, isn't it, Amy, actually, because when you become a director, God knows how, you know, people trawl the internet and you start getting these sales emails through. And it's really interesting because I've never really been sold to before as a business. And, you know, they range from the weird to the rude, really, don't they, Amy? And it's really interesting to see kind of sales tactics and how they've evolved over time.
It's interesting, isn't it? That
And actually, when people say that recruitment is a sales job, that really irritates me, because it isn't. You're not selling a commodity. You're selling a person, and that person is unique compared to the next person, as is the job, you know, that you're putting them into. And that for me, it underpins the way that we operate, is that you're not treating people like a commodity. You're getting to know them. You're treating them how you would like to be treated. And you're not selling to them. It is not a sales job. Why sell a job to somebody that is not going to be suitable to them? And that kind of process, it might work in other industries, fast moving, but it certainly doesn't wash in legal. So
no. And we're very much about the long term as well. You know, we could speak to a candidate, register with them, do, you know, an hour and a half on Zoom, getting to know them and actually say to them, do you know what? You're probably in the right job. You probably don't want something different. You're actually relatively pretty well paid. You know, you might think perhaps other people are getting paid better than you, but actually this is pretty fair. And, you know, obviously come back to us if you feel differently, but, you know, it's not just about, right, I've got somebody here and I've got to move them. We'll be really honest in that way, but I think we're also honest with sort of compassion as well. You know, and it's not just a CV, it's a person with the life and various things that, you know, and I mean, more than anything, you actually become a little bit of a counsellor to people, because you find out so much about their lives that's so personal. You know, whether they're about to get married, they're about to get divorced, whether they want to have children, you know, whether they've got a dog that they want to walk every day and they feel it's not possible in their current job. And, you know, whatever it is, we hear about it. And I think you've got to feel as a candidate that you're in really safe hands, and that there's that confidentiality there, that information.
Just an advisor, yeah.
Sympathetically and carefully, so that's a big part of what we do as well. But also the flip side, on the client side, they can tell us things that, you know, are obviously very confidential, and they've got to feel that that's going to be handled correctly as well.
All too often, sorry Claire, this is what you get in this two of us. I hear a lot when you speak to candidates, I turned down a job because it was just too far for me to travel. And the recruiter, has ghosted me since then and, or really had a go at me or tried to sell me the job or, whatever. And that always kind of really surprises me and how people, and that is where the reputation for recruiters has gone wrong, because people feel scared to divulge information to them. And what we want to do is create a space where people are not scared and they don't feel that they have to, take a job just because we've worked hard on it, and we've had people be offered jobs and they've not accepted it. And we're always really gracious with that, because people have their reasons. One of the biggest things you can do in your life is move jobs or, like moving house or getting married. And we appreciate that. And I think that people underestimate the power of moving a job, and what that means to somebody and their wider family.
Yes.
And I don't think you are taught that as a junior recruiter.
No, you're absolutely right. And I love what you said, Amy. You've used the word safety twice, and Katie, you've alluded to it. And honestly, it's the first time I have heard a recruiter bring up that term, certainly on this podcast. And I love it, because you're absolutely right. It's just that basic respect, isn't it? Someone sharing their life with us, that they're trusting us with their career and their happiness.
Yeah.
And we need to create that safe space for them to be really honest about what's going on for them.
Yeah, because we can't do our job properly if we don't understand. And that also works with clients as well. We have to understand what clients are specifically looking for and what kind of environment we're talking about. Because, same old, it doesn't matter where you're working. If you don't have clear instructions, you don't know what the parameters are. You don't know what's gone before, what some of the history might be. It's really difficult to then say, I can find you the perfect person.
Yeah.
Because there could be all manner of things that, have led to a client needing to recruit. And if you don't really get under the skin of that, then you sort of in no man's land.
Absolutely.
Going back to what you were saying about testing, if a client isn't prepared to kind of, give you, the wider details of the reason for the role, then, is it worth it? Is it worth it? Not worth us working on, but, can we work on it effectively?
You can't do your best work.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
The test.
Okay, we've got time for one final question, which is what's a book or a podcast you can't live without? Katie, I can see some books behind you. I'm trying to read is that Feel the Fear and Do It Anyway? The red one.
No, it's Stone Roses, War and Peace. There you go.
Similar.
Not that deep.
Love it.
And then there's one about Bowie. I can't remember music, so that's my my outlet when I'm feeling a bit stressed or anything, I listen to music.
Amazing. Love it.
I have been listening to, though, Caitlin Moran, which, she is modern day feminist, but I have been listening to that, and I can't go anywhere. The moment I get in the car, I have to put it on Bluetooth to listen to her. I think she's wonderful.
Yeah.
Brilliant. Yeah. What about you, Amy?
I don't really sort of read self-help books or anything like that. Nothing sort of...
it doesn't need to be lofty.
I'm quite a keen reader. That's what I studied, English literature at university, and so that's always been with me. So there's always a book on the go. I wouldn't say there's any particular genre, really, that I always go back to. And in terms of podcasts, I mean, I just love real crime. Nothing to do with work, but sort of Serial. I really got into that. I think it's quite nice because you totally switch off when you're listening to a podcast.
Yeah. Amen to that.
Audio. You completely immersed in it. It's very different when you've got no visuals, so quite enjoyed that.
Amy, Katie, thank you so much for your time. It's been an absolute pleasure talking to you.
Thank you, really enjoyed it.
Yeah. quite cathartic.
That is it for today. Thank you so much for being here, and I hope you enjoyed the episode. Please don't forget to like, rate, and subscribe so you never miss an episode. And if we're not already, let's connect on LinkedIn. See you next time.